Okay, thank you. I will.
Well, good morning. That was really pretty. Sorry. Let's try that again. Good morning. That's a little better. I don't know what I'm doing here. Paul asked me to come. We love Paul and Patsy. You might want to turn this down a little bit because I got some built-in volume. But we met them at Red River and other places. I'm a teacher. I teach at Fried Hardeman University. I teach Bible and philosophy. But my first name is Ralph. You don't call me an academic title. My first name is Ralph. We enjoyed eating with the elders last night. We've already enjoyed being with Paul and with Patsy. I'm nervous about being here because I can't tell any stories. And I do not teach with a coat on. I'll wear it for church. All right, but I do not teach with a coat on. I can't tell stories because Paul's already told them all. All right, and Brother Steve, it's good to see you today. I enjoyed eating with you last night and with the other elders. Jody, good to see you, and Melva, right? Okay, I'm going to try to know some of your names. I'm not going to know all of them. I know the head of the underground back here, Steve, and then I've met Ed and his wife of nearly 60 years. And then I've met, let's see, the girls here. All right, now let's see. It's Rita, and then I got two Pats. Okay, and then another, I don't know if I met you or not. But anyway, met several of you already, looking forward to it. This week, what we're going to be studying is Lives Focused on Jesus. By the way, this is my first wife, Joyce. We've been married 45 years. 43 of them have been happy. Those first two are a little bit rough. You know, and you get used to being married to somebody. So this is Southgate. I've heard about you and heard good things about you. We are glad to be here. I'm dressed a little bit differently than I was dressed last Sunday because we were with the Pearl Harbor Church of Christ, and I was wearing an Aloha shirt every time that I was preaching. I was thinking, yes, this is the way to do this, if there's a way to do it. My favorite song is No Ties in Heaven. All right, you know, so I don't like wearing ties, and I don't like dressing up, and I will if I have to, but I don't like it, you know. And so, who am I? I have taught Fried Hardeman for 36 years, taught Bible and philosophy, teach college students all the time. Just graduated a bunch of them, glad to see some of them gone. Okay, and then we get another batch in, you know, in August, and we're doing pretty well. We have about 2,000 students or so. And my PhD is in philosophy, but I have a master's degree in religion so that I can teach Bible classes and philosophy classes. And what else? We've been married 45 years. We got four children. And why? Because we don't want five. Okay, but we got four daughters. All of our sons are daughters. We got four daughters. They are aged 25 to 41. And we have seven grandchildren. And we should have had them first. You know, they are great, aren't they? How many of you have grandchildren? Hands up. Anybody have any great-grandchildren? Let's see. Wow, that's great. Well, anyway, they're fun. We've got our youngest grandchild is about 2 months old. And then the oldest granddaughter is 12. Okay, so I think that's about it. Joyce and I, she's a Mississippi girl. I'm a Middle Tennessee boy. We have a lot in common. I've preached all over Texas, and I found out that a lot of Tennesseans have transplanted to Texas. There are a few Texans that come to Tennessee, but a lot of Tennesseans come out here. I've heard about the Alamo stuff. And let's see, that's about it. Okay, so here's what we're going to be doing this week. We actually have some Bible stuff. All right, which one of these? Oh, yeah. All right, so here's what we're going to do. Lives Focused on Jesus. Where do I press this, Robert? This doesn't seem to be working. Okay, see if it's on. Does that help? Okay, well, all right. Oh, there you go. Okay, so Lives Focused on Jesus. Now, when you ask your neighbors to come this week, tell them we're going to be talking about Jesus every night. You know, so if somebody wants to know what we're going to talk about Jesus, what we're going to talk about, it's going to be Jesus every night. One of the things that the younger guys are saying about the church today is that they can come to the church and they just want to hear about Jesus. Now, I'm not going to go to that extreme, you know, but it is nonetheless true that I wonder, you know, what people are going to preach about in some places because they're about as thick as, is that Formica right there, Brother Jody? Looks like Formica. Okay, if this is Formica, then it ain't very thick. it's not the real wood. In other words, it's just got this veneer on it, and then on the inside there's some cheaper wood. Well, let me just say then that Christians are supposed to do the same thing on the inside out, and there's not supposed to be a veneer. So what worries me about the new generation is that I wonder how much substance they're getting. I teach classes in Christian apologetics and even had a logic class last semester, but it's all about focusing on Jesus and see what that's about. So here are your six lessons for the week. All right, so you'll know exactly where you are when you come. We're going to be talking about why Jesus, and this is the Bible class hour, so I'm going to ask your participation. All right, number two is Jesus in the Old Testament. Number three is Jesus and his personal ministry. Number four is Jesus. Oh, it's the same thing back here. All right, number four is Jesus and his church. Number five is Jesus and salvation. And number six is Jesus and my life. So that's what we're going to be talking about this week, and I hope that you are able to come. Okay, so why Jesus? That's where we are today. This means a lot to us. I told you we have four daughters. Our oldest daughter, I'll tell you maybe more about this later on, but she was on drugs and alcohol for 7 years. Now she's had 16 years of sobriety. But it was really tough for the 7 years that she was hooked on various illegal drugs. And that was not a cool time. Let's just say that I'll tell you more about this later. But this little painting, which is also a little sculpture-like thing, means a lot to Joyce and me. Notice that this guy wearing blue jeans. Now, some of you guys are messed up this morning because I met a guy. I think his name is Terry. He's wearing blue jeans and a coat. And I'm thinking, you need to make your mind up, son. You know, because if you're going to wear blue jeans, then don't wear a coat. All right? So if you're going to wear a coat, then wear pants. You know, that go with them. But don't wear blue jeans and a coat. People think you fought for the North and the South. Okay, so that's part of the deal. All right, so the deity of Christ here. Here's this guy in a blue jeans and an old ragged top. And notice that he's dirty. He's filthy. He's been in the mud. And then notice also that he's got a hammer in his right hand and a nail in his left hand. And notice in the back that some image that kind of looks like Jesus is near as somebody could figure when they did this. He's holding him up. Because there are times in our lives where Jesus has had to hold us up. And during the time that our daughter was on drugs and alcohol, our first two daughters are adopted, and then the second two daughters are natural. That's not the way that probably a lot of people do it. But nonetheless, our first two were adopted when they were babies. So she had a tough time. And we had a tough time. And her younger sisters had a tough time as we tried to deal with this. And so this idea of focusing on Jesus means a lot of real stuff to us. Now, what do you think about Jesus? Is this Jesus? All right, now it's time for input. Okay, what do you think about it? They call you big guy, Larry, is that right? Okay, so what do you think Jesus looked like that? What do you think? You don't think so? Why? Probably what? He didn't look that good. All right. What do you think, somebody? Now, this is a Bible class, so men or women can give me your opinions. Do you think Jesus looked like this? What do you think, somebody? Do y'all talk in Bible class ever? Have you been to church? Okay, so here's the point, then, that I need from you. I need to know, is this what you think Jesus looked like? No. Why? What? All right. He was a hard-working man. And what did I hear back here? He's too clean cut. Thank you very much. No, oh, you're talking about that. Yeah, he is too clean cut. What else? He's too pale. You think if he was Jewish, he wouldn't be that pale? Probably not. What do you think, Joyce? You said something. I think he's kind of wormy looking, too. Y'all know what wormy is here in Texas? Okay, he's kind of wormy looking, which means if you are a real... If you're a carpenter back in the days before the, you know, the way that people do carpenter work today, well, if you were a real carpenter, you have some arms on you. Because my dad was a carpenter, and boy, when he was driving a nail, man, you could watch the muscles, you know, jump in his arms. So this guy, he looks incredibly too white, you know, and I think that this guy probably, I don't know what he was smoking whenever he did this, but I don't think that's what Jesus looked like. However, none of us knows for sure, except for the fact that he would not stand out in a crowd. His appearance was not, King James would say, comely. You know, his appearance was not extraordinary, unusual. In other words, when he was a baby, what did Mary do with that halo whenever she tried to change him every time? I mean, you know, you had to do something. So he didn't walk around with a halo. He looked like a human baby. He was a human baby with the Holy Spirit as his father. Now, here's what you see from some of the world religions out there. And some people in the Islamic faith will think that Jesus was indeed a prophet. It says so in the Quran, that he was a prophet in the order of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, Ibrahim, Yitzchak, etc. Okay, so he was in that lineage, and so he was a prophet. Now, if I were some Jews, there's been a switch kind of in Judaism now. A lot of Jews used to just berate the fact that Jesus was a Jew and kind of try to ignore that he was Jewish. But now there are some Jews who are saying that he was an admirable Jew. Admirable. Even though he wasn't the Son of God, he was admirable. And then there's some in the Hindu faith that think that Jesus was a virtuous man. Meaning, you know, if you talk with a Hindu, don't be surprised if they think that Jesus was a man of virtue, because a lot of Hindus think that Jesus was a man of virtue, though they would find the idea of there being just, you know, one God being, you know, restrictive, because they got millions of gods, if you include the ancestors who are also gods. And then Buddhism, Jesus was an enlightened man. A bodhisattva is a Buddhist name for a guy who is enlightened. You ever seen the little skinny picture of the Buddha, and he's got skin and bones and stuff? And then you see a picture of Buddha, and he's got a big stomach. And the difference is the enlightenment, when he became enlightened. So I don't tell people that I'm overweight. I just tell them that I'm enlightened. Okay, Jesus was an enlightened man. And then finally, the Dalai Lama, who's also a form of Buddhist, says that Jesus was a man of karma. And that Jesus was a, matter of fact, here's a little article from that. Use your imagination. Did I cut that off again? All right, there it is. Okay, the karma of the gospel. And he talks about a number of things about Jesus that he respects. So, now I'm going to ask you, is this enough? Now wait a minute now. You're sounding a little bit too black and white here. Okay, is this enough? Patsy, you said no. Why?
He's the Son of God.
But if you're talking with somebody and they're willing to meet you part way, aren't you going to let them meet you part way?
Yes. And then we're going to finish the journey.
Oh, then we're going to finish the journey. Well, what do y'all think? You know, do you think this is enough? For instance, there are some people that would like to get together with Christians. Our president has just come back from talking with the people in Saudi Arabia, and that would be, of course, the Islamic faith. And then he's also been to the Western Wall, which no president has ever been to before, and he has put a little message in the Western Wall, and that would be right there that the Jews. So this past week, he's been trying to pull together Jews and Muslims just this past week. So what do you think about that? You think it's possible? I don't want a political discussion. Yes, ma'am, what's your name?
Politics.
Huh? I am, but the only thing that I want to say is that he's trying to pull people together. I don't want to talk Republican and Democrat. All right, so what do you want to say?
What she said was it transcends all of that. If Jesus is who he is, then I'm not going to hell, and I don't want you to go to hell. And we're going to agree on what we can agree on, but as she said, there's more to the journey than that.
Ah, good idea. What's your name? Good job, Deborah. Okay, so what else are you thinking about this? It makes it appear as though, see, you're living in a time, okay, since 1973, the period of time has been known as postmodernism. If you were born since 1983, then technically you are a millennial. If you are the son of a millennial or the daughter of a millennial, then technically you are a homelander or a Generation Z or a Generation Next. So things are happening quickly in the cultural changes in the United States. So I don't know how you, let's just call that group millennials. The group that have been, how many of you were born since 1983? Hands up. All right, so let's say then that if we talk, those of us who are baby boomers, we were born from 1947 to 1963. Actually, just one of those years. All right, but nonetheless, if you were born somewhere in there, then you're a baby boomer. Now, group that's come along is really big on tolerance, really big on accepting one another and getting along with one another. And here you're telling me that you've got something that you are not willing to compromise. Let me tell you how that looks to the 19 to the 34-year-olds. It doesn't look good. Now let's get back to you, sister. What's your name?
Teresa.
All right, what are you thinking?
All those statements that you put up there about Jesus.
Uh-huh.
If that's all there is, then Jesus is a liar and none of those statements can be true because Jesus said he was the Son of God. So
oh.
He can't be an honorable man or a virtuous man if he was a liar.
Okay, so Teresa says that if he's not who he claimed to be, then he can't be those other things? And why are you saying that again?
Because
he claims to be the Son of God. You're using C.S. Lewis's liar, lunatic, or Lord argument. Okay, and C.S. Lewis would put it this way. He would say, okay, the problem with making Jesus just an honorable Jew or a prophet or a virtuous man is the fact that he made these bodacious claims. And once he made these claims, all right, somebody look up John 8:58, please. 8:58, and let's be reading it, but I don't want you to take all day now. If you got one of those electronic Bibles, it's going to cost you extra. All right, but if you want to look up John 8:58, I want you to read it, please. There you are. Blue jeans and a coat. I like that, Terry. Can I do that? All right, so what I'm thinking then is, let's read John 8:58. What does it say?
I tell you the truth, Jesus answered, before Abraham was born, I am.
Ah, the I am. Is I am in capitals in your Bible, Deborah? And why do you think it's in capital letters?
Because it's a name.
All right, it is a name. And what name is that? It's Yahweh, and that's God's name. All right? What's unusual about that? Somebody look up Exodus 3:14. Exodus 3:14. And tell me what's unusual about this. I'm going to get you talking before this is over with, and then the bell's going to ring. Okay, but Exodus 3:14.
God told Moses to say, I am sent you.
Okay, so the I am is referring to God there. Now, the I am is maybe connected to the word Yahweh. Although nobody for sure knows how to say the word, it's not Jehovah, although it is in some of the translations, because there's no J sound in Hebrew. So they wouldn't have said it Jehovah. They could have said it Yehovah or Yehoah, or they could have said it Yahweh or Yahweh. Now, most of the time, people are saying, let's call it Yahweh. The reason we don't know how to say it is that there was no Vanna White and nobody there to put vowel sounds on these consonants. And there's just four consonants. All right, and so there's that word. And Jesus is saying he is that God. Now, once he's made these claims, that means now that this other stuff is out the window. Because now he's made the claim that he's God. He hadn't just claimed that he's the Son of God. He's claimed that he is God. That means, by the way, the deity of Christ. Deity does not mean Son of God. Deity means God. In Latin, it means God. So are you God or are you not God? There's a Spanish word for this that is very close about God. Do you say it, Deus? Okay, so it's God. All right, so the deistic idea of God is the fact that Jesus is God. Now that means then that he's made this claim. If he made this claim, he either knew that he was telling the truth. He either knew that he was lying or he didn't know that he was lying. Let's do it that way. Okay, if he knew that he was lying, then what? Then he is a liar. And give me some more adjectives. He's not an honorable man and?
Two-faced.
What's that?
Two-faced.
Two-faced and?
Hypocrite.
And duplicitous, which means two-faced. Okay, and then you got, okay, now what if he made these claims to be God and he didn't know that he really wasn't God? Now what? He's confused, he's gullible, what else? He's nuts, he needs to be treated by some folks. There's a manual called DSM-5, which is a diagnostical statistical manual of psychiatric disorders, and Jesus could be recognized as at least one or two or three or ten of those things in that particular manual in psychiatry. So, all right, so here's the problem. All right, he either If he's not who he says he was, nothing good can come from that. If he is who he said he was, then you either accept it or you don't accept it. Now, that's just it. Now, the reason why there's no wiggle room on this, although there are some things with which we can set up a discussion with Muslims and Buddhists and Hindus, we should be kind and compassionate to them. We should not expect that they're going to do bad things to us unless we have good reason to believe that they're going to do bad things to us. I've talked with a lot of Muslims in Africa and other places, and they don't intend any harm. But 5% or so of any people, if they do some bad stuff, can give a bad reputation for everybody else. Because there's a lot of Muslims in the world. It's like 1.2 billion Muslims in the world. And the ones that you think that you know about that are the worst would probably constitute maybe 5% of that number. I would hate for people to judge Texans or Tennesseans or the church on the basis of what 5% of our people do. All right, so let's be careful with our attitudes about these, but this is an area for which we have no wiggle room. So what do you want to do about it? Well, here's an argument for the deity of Christ. I'm not going to do that yet, though. I'm going to ask you to give me your best stuff on why you believe Jesus is the Son of God or Jesus is God. And you're Christians. You wear the name Christ. So you should be ready to go in this, all right?
Don't the Muslims call him the Word?
They do refer to him. Mohammed did refer to him as... Mohammed didn't probably actually write the Quran, but he preached from about 631 for about AD for about 21 years, and probably his disciples wrote down what he said in the Quran. So he does call him the Word, and he calls us people of the book. And he has Jesus miraculously speaking as an infant. I don't mean as a young boy, but as an infant, he's telling his mother Mary, who is, by the way, the only woman mentioned in the Quran, he's telling his mother Mary that he's a prophet after the order of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So Muhammad in the early years was very, very congenial with Christians. According to a guy that I know, Dr. Everett Hufford, who lived for 21 years in the Middle East, he thought that he was so congenial with Christians because he felt that the Christians would bond together with him and his followers to drive the pagans out of the Middle East, Mecca, Medina, etc. And when they didn't do that, later on in the Quran, his attitude toward Christians is not as good. But toward the early part of the Quran, he has a very favorable view. And he even calls us people of the book, which I like. You know, isn't that cool to be called people of the book? He calls us people of the book. Now let's go back to the point. What's your strongest stuff on Jesus?
Eyewitness
account. Eyewitness account. Why is that so important to you? Mm-hmm. How important were eyewitness accounts in the Old Testament? Who knows? Eyewitness accounts in the Old Testament. At the mouths of two or three witnesses, somebody could be put to death.
And without two or three, there was no trial.
And without two or three, there was no trial. You've been to church. You know, that's impressive. That's really good. I knew that about you. Okay, so now let's go back to the point then. But you hadn't really... All right, you've told me the eyewitness accounts. What else have you got to tell me that Jesus is a significant person? All right, the true prophecies. All right, now, I was just reading a book recently that said that there were 317 of these in the Old Testament. And I'm going to be using those later on today, and we're going to look at each one of them in detail. No, that's not. Okay, but there are 317 in the Old Testament called messianic prophecies. Who knows what that is? Messianic prophecy. Hands up, somebody. Prophecies about the Messiah. All right, so there's about 300. These are hard to count in the Old Testament, but there's about 317 of these. And so somebody, who said prophecy? You get a gold star, whoever said that. Okay, so now you got eyewitnesses. Now you got prophecy. What else do you got to indicate that Jesus is the Son of God? Ah, the persecution of the early church. Now, I wouldn't agree with everything about this movie, but we were in, overseas last week, but still in the United States. But it's a long trip from Los Angeles, about 5 hours or so to Hawaii, so you get to watch some movies. One of the movies I watched was about silence. I wouldn't recommend that you necessarily watch this, but it was about the death of people in the 1600s in Japan because they claimed to be Christians and the way that they persecuted them to try to make them renounce the faith or put their foot on an image of Jesus. If they would just put their foot on an image of Jesus, which is a real bad thing in an Eastern culture, you know, it's like whenever the statue of Saddam Hussein fell. Notice that some of them were hitting the statue with their shoes. And Easterners, Westerners are saying, what's that all about? They're dusting their sandals off. No, that's the ultimate insult, is to take your shoe and to put it in somebody else's face. Even in Eastern culture, if I'm sitting next to somebody in Eastern culture, I might not want to cross my legs and put the bottom of my shoe toward his face. Because in some countries, that means we're going to fight. You know, because you have given me the ultimate insult. So if they would just put their shoe on an image of Christ on the cross, then they could save their lives. But many of them didn't. And hundreds of them died. And they died in ways that you don't want to describe. So whenever you talk about that, the early church, Larry says, died for what they believed to be true, therefore indicating they really believed it. It changed their lives, and they really believed it. Anybody else got something?
Empty tomb.
What?
The empty tomb.
The empty tomb. What's so significant about that, Paul?
He said he would be raised, and he was.
He said he was going to be raised, and he was. The DBR is central to the gospel. What is the DBR? The death, burial, and resurrection in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verses 1 through 4. It is central to the resurrection. Now, you've given me a bunch of these ideas. How do I put them on one skeleton? Well, there's more than one way to do this, of course, but this is the one that I have today. If the particular characteristics of the person and work, I teach my students, this is the P&W argument, person and work. If the particular characteristics of the person and work of Jesus Christ are such as to be beyond those of created beings, then Jesus is the Son of God. It is the case that the person and work of Jesus Christ raise him higher than the level of created beings. Therefore, he is who he said he was. Now, that is a skeleton for you on which all this other stuff hangs. All this other stuff shows you that he was not a created being and that he, even though he did come to Mary, he didn't start there. Where in the Bible would I go to show that Jesus did not start as a baby? All right, John chapter 1, verses 1, 2, and 3. What else you got? What? Genesis chapter 3. The Old Testament prophecies that said he was coming. Somebody look up 1 Timothy 3:16. We could almost sing this. It might have... Yes, sir.
I want you to explain to me how I have this picture of Jehovah or however you want to pronounce his name sitting up there. He's the head honcho.
Right.
And you have sitting at his right hand side, you have his son, Jesus.
Uh-huh.
Now, other than absolute unity, how can you say that those two are the same?
Uh-huh. Okay, let's go to Colossians chapter 1, and let's read verses 15 through 17.
I've read all this.
Well, the rest of the audience may not have. Okay, so I'm saying there's one God. I'm not saying that there are not three individual personalities of the one God.
No, I'm not talking about personalities. Here he is on the throne. Here's the guy sitting at the right-hand side of him.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I mentioned, not everybody has read Colossians 1:15, and then I want you to look at 1 Timothy 3:16. Okay, so let's do Colossians 1:15 through 17, somebody. All right, now what does it say? Who wants to read it?
He is the image of invisible God, of the invisible God.
He's the image of the invisible God, okay?
The firstborn over all creation.
Uh-huh.
For by him, all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things were created by him for him.
Mm-hmm.
He is before all things, and in him all things hold together.
All right, that's good. Now let's do 1 Timothy 3:16. That he was what?
The Word did all of that.
That's right, the Logos.
Right, the Word did all that.
Now, let me make sure that I know where you're coming from. What exactly are you saying one more time so I can hear it again? Because I am from Tennessee.
I'm saying that if you have God sitting on the throne and you have Jesus sitting at the right hand side of the, on the right hand side of the throne,
mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Rather than absolute unity, the same. Do you believe, how many teachers do I have in here? Okay, do you believe it is possible to give the same opportunity for instruction without getting identical results in the classroom?
Absolutely.
All right, what does it mean to give the same opportunity? See, the problem is same, my brother. What does same mean? If it's the Greek word isos, then you know that's the word behind isosceles triangle. And it is used in Acts 15 to represent the same gift. Cornelius and his people received the same gift. Now, was it identical in every respect? The household of Cornelius received the same gift according to Acts 15. I think it's about verse 31. Somebody look it up. Okay. Now, that means then that Cornelius and his household received the same gift. Now, the question then is it identical in every respect from Acts chapter 2?
The early Christians had specific and very unique, many of them, abilities that came with their gift, which was a sort of a scaffold for the church and later passed away.
Okay, so the early church, the early apostles, had some pretty cool gifts that came with the same gift. Did Cornelius and his household ever demonstrate? Now turn to Matthew chapter 10 and let's see verse 7, I think. Matthew 10 and verse 7. And who found the same gift in Acts 15? Did anybody find the same gift? Well, I'm looking for the expression same gift. Right now, however, I was looking for another passage. Matthew what?
I thought you said Matthew something.
What did I say? I'm still thinking about this similar thing. Oh, Matthew chapter 10, okay. Verse 7, I think. Okay. Now, I want the passage that says he gave them the ability to raise the dead and to heal the lepers. Let's read that verse, please. Now, what gift did the apostles receive? They could raise the what? And they could cleanse the what? They could cleanse the lepers and they could heal the what? And they could exorcise demons. Now, did the household of Cornelius receive any of those gifts? If they did, the Bible is silent about it. So the question then is, in what way was it similar? Well, they spoke in tongues, and there was the visible demonstration of the coming of the Holy Spirit to indicate God's approval of the Gentiles. Now, the question then is, can Jesus and God be the same without being identically the same in every way? What do you think?
First John says they are one.
Uh-huh.
He also says they agree in one.
They do. But was Jesus God? Was Jesus identical to God the Father? He was, but he had the same divine essence. That doesn't mean, however, that he was the same personality. What about the Holy Spirit? Was it identical to Jesus? All right, was it identical to God the Father? Did it have the same divine essence of the Godhead? And the answer would be yes. Now, it's bugging me about the same gift. Maybe that's in Acts 15. Somebody look up same gift on your little computer thingy. And I want to find it in maybe New American Standard, same gift. Yes.
One thing that we Christians have to be willing to live with is a bit of mystery, that we can't have a complete understanding of who he is because he's told us over.
As the mountains are above the sea, so my ways are higher than your ways and my thoughts are higher than your thoughts, in Isaiah 55. But the question that has come before us today is, if they are the same, then how can he be to the right hand of? Well, that I can partly explain, although my dear brother that I hadn't met yet, I will not be able to explain all of this, and I never claimed that I could. Well, it's muddy enough right now. Okay, so but hold on just a second. This idea of this, what you're seeing, it's a problem in philosophy called the identical of indiscernibles and the indiscernibility of identicals, which means if you're at a plant that's making, let's say, Frito-Lay chips, and they're coming off the assembly line, are they the same? Well, are they meant to be as much the same as the people can qualitatively make them? Yes. So that if you buy, let's say, a Snickers bar in one state, it's going to be very much like a Snickers bar in another state. In Jackson, Tennessee, where I'm from, we make Pringles potato chips for half the world. The other plant is in Europe somewhere. Okay, so if you open a can of Pringles, okay, it's supposed to be the same wherever you open those. But are they qualitatively indistinguishable, which means are they identical in every respect? And the answer would be no. Do they have to be identical in every respect in order to be the same? And I think, what time is it? That's it. Read it for me, brother. I am, and I had it at Acts 15. It's Acts 11, 17, because Acts 9, Acts chapter 10 is Peter in the house of Cornelius, and so the next chapter he's to the elders. Yeah. Right. So Acts 11, 17, when Peter's discussing this with the elders back in Jerusalem, he calls it what? He calls it the same gift, although it was not identical in every respect. But I want to get back to this deity stuff. Here's my basic argument. Can I show that Jesus had characteristics that are above the level of created beings? And the answer is, I believe that I can, yes. Now, one such place where Jesus does this himself, all right, is this is the longest place in the Bible, in John 5, 19 through 47. This is the longest place in the Bible where Jesus will talk to you about his own nature. So if you want to know how Jesus understood his own nature, then go to John 5, especially these verses. Now, I teach my students that it's the Christian Contemporary Music Association, because they may not remember these four things, but they can remember that. All right, the Christian Contemporary Music Association, there is not such thing as that as far as I know. All right, but I just made it up to help them to remember the acronym here. All right, character. Jesus claimed that his character was perfect. He claimed that his credentials in verse 20 were perfect. He claimed that his mission was not like anybody else's mission in verse 24. And he claimed that his authority was not like the authority of anybody else that had ever been on earth before. Now, one place that you can go in the Bible, if you just had a one-time study with somebody about Jesus, John 5 is significant because John 5 is where Jesus talks about himself. And this is where you let Jesus speak for himself, because as we've been talking about this, this kind of is deep water in some places, but I like for Jesus to tell you himself who he was. And here's what he says. He says, number one, that his character was perfect. All right. Was that a bell? No, it wasn't, was it? Okay. All right. So first of all, what is the character of Jesus? Well, I'm going to have to flip through this. All right. The character of Jesus is that he lived his entire life, yet he did not sin. Now, in Hebrews 4:15, we find that passage. We also find it in 1 Peter chapter 2 that he did not sin. Yeah, all right, so you can talk about the character of Jesus. Number two, you can talk about, I'm going to have to flip over this. You can talk about his credentials. And if I could end on no other place except this one, this would be a good place. I'm going to give you seven things I want you to remember. See if you can do it. All right, here are the seven things. If you want to talk about the credentials of Jesus, let me tell you what I don't want. I don't want to go to a surgeon and see up on the wall that he has a correspondence degree in surgery. All right, I don't want him to cut into me and then say to the nurse, "Do you recognize any of this stuff?" Okay, so what I really want is a reason to believe that he is who he said he is. So when my wife had cancer surgery, went to Vanderbilt, had a very good, you know, surgeon. We swap out cancer right now. We're both here and loving being here. But here are the seven things that I would like for you to know about Jesus. Number one, his preexistence. He preexisted. We talked about this already. Genesis 1, 26 and 27, John 1, 1, Colossians 1, 15. Number two, his virgin birth. His virgin birth. Isaiah 7, 14, Matthew 1, 21. Number three, his perfect life, meaning that he did not sin. Hebrews 4, 15, 1 Peter 2. Number four, his death and burial. All right, he died in Matthew 27 and Mark 15. By the way, if you could just remember one of these scriptures with all these points, you can study with anybody in the world about Jesus if you just sit down with your Bibles. I've done this before in Africa and in other places, just studying with somebody. Number five, his resurrection. It means he stood again. This is in the last chapter of every gospel, beginning in verse 1. The last chapter, beginning in verse 1, except for John. And it's the next to the last chapter, beginning in verse 1. So you can find this real easy in your Bible if you just remember it's verse 1 of the last chapter of every gospel except for John, and it's the next to the last chapter, verse 1. And so you tell them about his resurrection. Number 6, this is going to be easy because it's only in Acts chapter 1. All right, he ascended into heaven. Number 7, he now reigns as King of kings and Lord of lords. Oh, let me get back to the point. The right hand up. Let's say that there's a Texas flag and a U.S. flag flying together. We just came from the Pearl Harbor last week, and so we saw a lot of flags of a lot of states. But what's the rule about the U.S. flag flying at what height in comparison to the Texas flag? All right, the U.S. flag is supposed to always be flying higher. Now, the Texas flag can be with every other state on that level. So what does it mean the right hand of? The right hand of does not mean that he's secondary in insignificance. It's an Eastern expression which means having the same authority as. For instance, if you're having a dinner party, let's say a formal dinner party, and the king is having a formal party, who does he put at his right hand? He puts at his right hand, first of all, they're not in a chair, they're reclined at the meal. In the first century, and he puts at his right hand a person of equal authority. So when Jesus is at the right hand of the throne of God, you know, as the little boy says, you know, to his dad, he said, "Look at this beautiful world," and to think that God made it all with his left hand. And so he said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Well, the Bible says Jesus is on his right hand." Okay, so, but the right hand of means equal to authority of God. Now, he now reigns. I don't want to talk about what Jesus is doing presently, but he's busy. Jesus is currently busy with all Christians being with us and helping us. Now, here are the seven things. Now, let's see if you can do it. Here are the seven reasons to believe that Jesus is the Christ, the seven signs of the Christ. Number one, his preexistence. Number two, y'all are really quiet, his virgin birth. Number three, his perfect life. Number four, his death and burial. Number five, his resurrection. Number six, his ascension. And number seven, he's now reigning as King of kings and Lord of lords. If you know that, this gives anybody in the world seven reasons from the Bible to believe that Jesus is who he said he was. Now, where it fits into John chapter 5 is, it's just the second point out of four. All right, so what's the third one? CCM. The M is divine mission. Jesus, if you use just John or 1 John, you see that he came to suffer. He came voluntarily. He's the only one, although others have gone to heaven. Who went to heaven, by the way, in a whirlwind? Elijah. And who was translated that he should not see death? All right. So there are some people that had gone to heaven, but nobody had come from heaven to earth before and then gone back to heaven. Y'all sing that song here? Lord, I lift your name on high. Y'all know that song? What do y'all sing in Texas? Lord, I lift your name on high. Lord, I love to sing your praises. I'm so glad you're in my life. I'm so glad you came to save us. You came from heaven to earth to show the way, from the earth to the cross, my debt to pay, from the cross to the grave, from the grave to the sky. Lord, I lift your name on high. And now this is the part that our generation often forgets. His authority. They want to just say, give me Jesus, but don't give me his word. Give me Jesus, but don't give me his word. John chapter 5 makes it clear that he's the fulfillment of Old Testament prophecies, that he has an intimate relationship with the Father, and that he has the authority to teach other people about God and to call other people to him. He even had the authority to forgive their sins, and someday we will stand before the judgment seat of Christ. Now, having said all of that, our lesson is over. Thank you.